are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It is Tuesday, November 14th, 2017. My name is Michael Brooks on a Michael Tuesday, and this is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. On today's program, Branko Martičić on the Ricketts family, the anti-union multi-billion dollar family you've never heard of who are ruining America's unions. We'll also talk about why last Tuesday was a good result for leftists and for social Democrats across the country. Plus, the revelations keep coming. A woman has stepped forward accusing Judge Roy Moore of sexually assaulting her when she was a teenager and then threatening her as Senate Republicans start to slightly move away from Roy Moore. Still has the support of Alabama Republicans and Breitbart. And Sheldon Adelson no longer is supporting Steve Bannon. The Jeff Sessions Justice Department is weighing an investigation into the Clinton Foundation. Hooray. And speaking of investigations, it looks like WikiLeaks and Don Jr. were chatting. Is this really a surprise to anyone? Mike Pence, though, is implicated in another lie out of those revelations. And the Trump travel ban has been allowed to take partial effect, while the FBI reports that hate crimes have risen for a second straight year. What a surprise that a gang of probable criminals is presiding over a country in crisis and decline. And Donald Trump has asked the White House kitchen staff to make him McDonald's menu items. And even as Republicans don't want to do anything about guns and are talking about mental health at a very high level, Donald Trump and Republicans are proposing major cuts in public health funding. And Burma's government gives itself a pass on violations of Rohingya rights, arguably genocide, all that and more on today's Majority Report. I actually literally cannot hear anything on my headphones, so I don't know if maybe they're just blown. I might need to have another pair. Sorry about that, guys. It's been a tricky tech day here. Let me then start by talking about something that is not tricky. It's perfect. And that is today's first sponsor, Omaha Steaks. Holiday gift giving is fast approaching this year. Choose gifts that are going to give you, that are simple to give joy and to get. Choose Omaha Steaks. A huge variety from premium steaks to skillet meals, personalized one-on-one service, and easy to order. We've said many times, we've had free, they've sent us a bunch of Omaha Steaks things here. I've had the chicken. I've tried the steak. There's even been desserts. Usually when those things show up at the Majority Report offices, there's a mad dash to get every Omaha Steak item. They're delicious. And it's a gourmet food holiday gift that never disappoints. And you can personalize each gift for a more meaningful experience. This can be a great business gift, not just for families, because it's the holiday season. You have a lot of gifts to give out. Just for my listeners, enjoy a special holiday pricing on the perfect business gift. It's an ideal holiday gift for your clients, employees, or partners. The perfect business gift includes 4 bacon-wrapped tri-tip steaks, 4 Omaha Steak burgers, 4 gourmet franks, 2 boneless pork chops, 4 kielbasa sausages, 4 caramel apple tartlets, plus you'll get free shipping. This holiday gift package is only $59.99. Go to omahasteaks.com, type in report in the search bar, and choose the perfect business gift. Again, omahasteaks.com. Enter, thank you. Enter code report in the search bar. The perfect business gift. Send or experience this exclusive gift package for only $59.99, and it ships free. All right, let me see here. Gotta do a, it's like we're bringing in a pinch hitter here, folks. Let's see if this works.
Or like the pit stop in NASCAR.
Or like the pit stop, exactly. Coach comes on the field. The technician comes on.
Brendan with the good sound effects. Wow.
I trained under the guy in Police Academy. Yes. Thanks, Mom and Dad.
I like when Police Academy was so stupid that that was like the first movie that you recognized was a stupid movie when you were a kid. You're like, this is really stupid. Speaking of really stupid, I will take that transition to play this clip of Stephanie Ruhle. Now, we all know that essentially, in a macro sense, we're having this large social cleansing taking place right now. And it's engulfing everyone from essentially career criminals who've gotten away with systemic sexual abuse and assaults on women and have been hidden and protected by large institutions. It's implicating people for boorish and disgusting behavior, people for abusing their positions at work. It's implicating, you know, even I think a lot of interactions which aren't necessarily as black and white as those, but it's causing a large cultural reflection, which is obviously infinitely past due. And maybe people like Bill Clinton, maybe he's coming up next. But it's also engulfing, you know, things that even in our worst of times, you would at least think theoretically Americans were all sort of on the same page with, which is that you probably, if you're in your 30s, shouldn't be trying to hook up with a girl who is 14 or a boy for that matter. Even the most libertine would say, you know, I don't know, what is it? You know, 18, 21, okay? Like there's some.
The basic rule I heard is the oldest older person's age plus 7. The older person's age divided by 2 plus 7. So 32, you divide that by 2, be 16. And then plus 7, be 23-year-old would be the youngest. That'd be kind of, that's the rule. I don't know. That's not law.
All right. Well, whatever. Some rule like that, some rule in that vicinity. I'm saying that even if we were to take the most questionable metric, I would really hope that there is no one in this country and no one listening that would question anything involving under 21, or you know, like, or at the, or anything that Roy Moore has been accused of. Okay, Judge Moore, and there's a system here. There's certainly a pattern, which is what criminal prosecutors look for in a case. A pattern like a 14-year-old, a woman who said when she was 14 that he forced her to touch him, that he touched her, that he groomed her, that he did this and basically, you know, got her mother out of the way, essentially.
Kidnapped her at a courthouse.
Kidnapped her at a courthouse. There's a couple of other women who were, I believe, were 16 at the time. Maybe one was 17. Now we have a woman we'll get to later who was accused him of sexual assault when she was underage. And we also have a story that, you know, he was banned from a mall. Which, yeah.
Happens all the time.
But of course, we do not share that consensus in this country because there are many people that have no value for women's lives at any age. A lot of those people are extremists in terms of religious belief, whether they be Christian, Muslim, or Jewish. And there's also just cynical political calculations. Now, Stephanie Ruhle here is going to engage in a little bit of a deep cut in terms of delusion. Remember this period of time where there were people talking about how Ivanka Trump would somehow be a force for restraint and even liberal values in her father's grotesque administration. Now, mind you, Ivanka Trump has accomplished nothing independently in her life. There's serious, incredible charges about the most heinous sweatshop abuses in her companies. And she is purely the product of inherited wealth and stood by while her father ran an overtly xenophobic racist campaign and himself was multiply accused of sexual assault and boorish behavior. So, but for some reason, a lot of people thought that she was going to be the moral anchor. I think some people who are less insane have kind of let that go. But here is Stephanie Ruhle on MSNBC actually bringing up that old chestnut.
From a risk management perspective, by the time the Access Hollywood tape came out, when President Trump himself said, I do what I want, I grab him by the X, you know, you can do what you want when you're a celebrity. Republicans looked at it, right or wrong, and said, from a risk management perspective, I've got to go with this guy. I don't want to see Hillary Clinton be the next president of the United States. You get that. We're talking about a small time race in Alabama. Those two are not the same. This could actually be a moment for President Trump to say thanks, but no thanks. Think about how far that would go. President Trump gets whacked right, left and center for morally reprehensible behavior. How about Ivanka Trump? Ivanka Trump has said repeatedly that her brief is the advancement of women and girls. Now she's on this tax reform tour. She has been absolutely dead silent since Election Day. I think 2 weeks ago in a speech overseas, she said no one should ever accept sexual harassment and made no comment about her father or anything else. How about now, Ivanka? You want to back women? This is your moment.
Yeah, and that's going to happen never. Maybe if she sees an opportunity to... you know, cut her dad of a future real estate deal or something. First of all, this is an impulse that even when it's applied to people who actually might deserve to be considered moral people or truth tellers or anything else is misplaced because it's not structural. This is a structural problem, not something that is about a sort of individual call out or accountability. It's a cultural, social, criminal, organizational problem. And then to apply to Ivanka Trump, like this ongoing fantasy about her is kind of like it's worthy of psychological exploration in and of itself. It's never going to happen. I'm sure you'll see a lot of stories in the coming weeks that are leaked to various journalists that Jared and Ivanka are unhappy, and she will say something generic about it again in the future. And maybe even specific if Roy Moore drops out. But she is never going to intervene or get far ahead of her dad on anything, ever. Period. And it's embarrassing that people are still speculating about this on television. Are you always losing stuff, Matt?
I actually had a tough time finding my keys this morning.
I had a tough time finding my keys last week. Well, you know what? It stopped being cute years ago. Now you just annoy everyone who knows you, family, friends, and coworkers. That's because you're Matt, that person. You always lose stuff. Time for Track R. We're all looking for something. For some, it's love. For some, it's purpose or an unforgettable experience. But for most, it's your keys. 8 years ago, Tracker changed everything when they released their first tracking device. Now, they've done it again with the all-new Tracker Pixel. With Tracker Pixel, you'll never worry about losing your things again. Tracker Pixel is the lightest Bluetooth tracking device on the market. Place Tracker Pixel on whatever you tend to lose, keys, wallet, or purse. It's small enough to fit anywhere. When you misplace an item that has Tracker Pixel attached, use your smartphone. A 90 decimal alert will find you in seconds. It even has a powerful LED light so you can find anything even in the dark. Lose your phone, just press the button on your Tracker Pixel and your phone rings even if it's on silent. You can even locate your item if it's miles away because every tracker is part of the largest crowd locate network in the world. It's like Waze for finding things. Tracker makes a great gift. During this holiday season, save 20% off your first order when you go to thetracker.com/majority. That's thetracker.com/majority. That's thetracker. The tracker. The T-H-E-T-R-A-C-K capital R Patreon.com/majority. Every year, millions of people receive the gift they like, the least liked gift of all time, underwear. But we still give it to our family and our loved ones who just don't want it. But maybe it's not the underwear that's the problem. Maybe it's the kind of underwear. Let me tell you about MeUndies, the only underwear that makes an amazing gift. MeUndies is absolutely the most comfortable pairs of underwear that I have, and they look cool. They're incredibly comfortable, and they do turn something from a gift that seems like an afterthought and almost like a sort of practical insult into something inspired. Matt, once again, how long have you been on the modal train?
2011.
See the way he says it? He says it like...
Because like, everyone wants to like say,
you're
like 3 years.
LeBron, just like walking away, just like chalk it.
Don't even have to watch it go through the hoop.
Exactly. Like you've already turned your head and the thing is about to sink. Soft, flexible waistband, 3 times softer than cotton, naturally sustainable sourced fiber. MeUndies made underwear the perfect gift that everyone is going to love you for. It's goddamn holiday miracle. This year, don't give underwear, give MeUndies. This holiday season, to get your exclusive 20% off the softest underwear and socks you'll ever wear, free shipping and 100% satisfaction guarantee, go to MeUndies.com/majority. That's MeUndies.com/majority. All right, everybody. We will be back in a moment with Branko Maricic on the Majority Report. Welcome back to the Majority Report. Michael Brooks here. Joining us now is Branko Maricic. He is a staff writer at the Jacobin magazine. Branko, how are you doing?
Good, good. How you got, Michael?
I'm doing well. It's good to be speaking with you.
Yeah, I mean, what do you want to talk about? The Ricketts affair?
I have never been directed by a guest like that before. You're like, don't stop with the pleasantries. Let's get to business. Yes, I want you to tell us. People in New York will know, probably have seen headlines with regards to the Ricketts family shutting down the Gothamist and DNA Info, which were two sites that were relevant. I mean, they weren't, you know, to be blunt, they weren't the kind of most amazing websites in the world, but they were relevant to the New York experience. They got shut down a couple of weeks ago by the Ricketts family. Explain to us what happened there and how it fits into who the Ricketts are and their role in American politics.
Okay, well, yeah, those journalists decided a couple of weeks ago to unionize. And Joe Ricketts, I mean, you'd be hard-pressed to find a lot of public statements by Joe Ricketts. He's sort of thrown under the radar for a long time, but he, you know, he has a had this blog that he's writing, and in September, I think of this year, he you know, left a post basically saying, unions, why I don't believe they're a good thing, and, you know, his conclusion was ultimately, unions will destroy the system of free enterprise that we have. And so, what happened was when they voted to unionize, he put a statement basically saying, you know, I can't run this, websites, you know, with this kind of cost, so I'm going to have to shut the whole thing down. Which, I mean, I think to a lot of people, including myself, was a very transparent sort of anti-union kind of action. There was nothing in the union unionization effort that was necessarily going to add any extra cost to the websites, which, as far as I've heard, were profitable and making money. Certainly for a guy as wealthy as him. So, it seems like a very transparently anti-union kind of retaliatory action, which I think a lot of people don't know who Joe Ricketts is, so they came as quite a surprise. But if you look at basically the history of his political donations, it's not really too surprising. He was basically, him and his wife were the maybe the biggest... maybe don't quote me on that, but they were one of the biggest, certainly, backers of Scott Walker's presidential campaign, which completely went nowhere. But they put a lot of money into that, and big fans of him. And of course, Scott Walker's most known for you know, being the union busting
governor. Can you make sure you're speaking into your headphones or your headset, or if you're on a headset, could you pull it out?
Yeah, I'm actually on a phone, but...
that's, you know, a lot better now. I don't know what you just did, but you're a lot better now.
Okay, my bad.
Yeah, fine, go ahead.
Yeah, where did we let off?
You were talking about... I'll set you up a bit more, because basically you're saying the Ricketts family, they're not as well known at all, as an example, as the Koch brothers, or Sheldon Adelson, or the Mercers, or these other, you know, dangerous plutocrats who are very actively involved in American politics. But they dumped a lot of money into Scott Walker's presidential campaign. It is actually interesting in light of them shutting down two profitable websites, because the journalists there wanted to be able to have some safety and earn a living. They certainly had endless abundant resources to dump into one of the least successful presidential campaigns in American history. But the point that I think you were making in your piece, it's very interesting, specifically about the Ricketts. All of these families and all of these people obviously share a very anti-worker, anti-union, you know, anti-make-a-living agenda. But the Ricketts kind of prime animating force, the Mercers have their, you know, alt-right thing, the Kochs have their kind of feudalist libertarianism, Adelson has Likud plus, you know, let me do business how I want to do in Macau. But the Ricketts' prime animating thing is union busting. Explain that and the relationship to Scott Walker and where this family fits into the kind of broader right-wing chessboard.
Right, well, yeah. So, I mean, Joe Ricketts is on the record of saying that he thinks that unions are, you know, going to destroy free enterprise. And when you look at how he's donated to both the Scott Walker and in other states, you know, his wife has donated money to the current governor of Missouri, who is a big right to work guy. And he made Missouri, I believe, 28th right to work state, almost, you know, as soon as he took power there. You've also got one of the Ricketts family, one of the sons, he's the governor of Nebraska, and he, while that's already a right to work state, so you know, that mission accomplished there, no need there. He has embarked on an austerity program where he's basically cut, I believe it's $56 million from the budget, most of which is cutting things like public services, elderly and developmentally disabled. It's a very kind of cruel and almost cartoonishly cruel kind of cut. At the same time as he wants to pursue tax cuts as well. And he's also blocked Medicaid expansion in the state as well.
So how did this family make their money, and how do they inherit their money? Where did they come from, and why do they have a lower profile than these other oligarchs?
Yeah, I mean, they made the money from Ameritrade, which is this company that Joe Ricketts set up, which is a broker for trading stocks. He's fabulously wealthy from that, and he only really became politically active, at least in terms of donations, from what I can see, once he'd already decided to retire. So, you know, that was around about the 2010 period. So he basically decided, you know, he took a back seat in the running of his own company, kind of left it up to his children, and then, you know, but he still had all his money lying around, and I guess he decided what I'm going to do with it. I may as well try and put it towards a good use. And for him, a good use is basically supporting candidates who are very anti-union and anti-worker. And also, actually, the family also owns Chicago Cubs, and the other kind of project.
Branko, you're breaking up again.
And so the family also owns the Chicago Cubs. Mm-hmm. But the other major project that they're involved in, it's probably the thing that probably at this point most of them. Why they've gone on the radar, I would say it's probably because they seem to have left their political activity till quite late, or relatively late. Unlike the coach who have been, you know, funding this stuff for a very long time. And the other thing is, I think the Scott Walker donations were huge, but because that campaign went nowhere, people sort of didn't really take much notice of exactly who was funding it, you know.
Did they get behind Trump eventually, or did they kind of fake that they wouldn't support him because he was uncouth or something?
Yeah, well, you know, for a while they sort of took that line. They were donating money to every candidate, to PACs that were supporting pretty much every candidate other than Trump. But once Trump was obviously the winner. Obvious that no one's going to be able to dethrone him. You know, I think the record, like pretty much every other Republican, did that sort of calculus in their head, and they decided, well, you know what? Despite the fact that we have all these supposed disagreements with what kind of stance he has, we're going to back him all the way. So I can't remember the exact dollar total that they donated to Trump, but yeah, once he was the Republican candidate, they fully backed him. And actually, his son was in the running to be Trump's deputy commerce but I think in the end he didn't do it because the trouble he would have to go to divest himself wasn't worth it. So yeah, they were eventually all in on Trump.
And what do you think is next? I mean, do they have, presumably they must be, like many other people, I guess, in some ways frustrated with the state of a Republican control of Washington, because they haven't gotten rid of Obamacare. They haven't passed a huge upward redistribution of wealth in terms of a new tax bill. On the other hand, obviously through executive orders and through the courts, a lot of damage has already been done in the Trump era to workers and the environment and other things that would be on the Ricketts agenda. But do you have a sense of kind of what their sort of next moves are? And also, what about in terms of, you know, the journalistic space? I mean, journalists are just starting to kind of try to unionize and create some, solidarity and safety for themselves in this kind of, this marketized journalistic era. people like the Ricketts are obviously some of the only people and groups in America that can invest in anything like newspapers or even kind of traditional websites at this point. Are they, you know, do you think that they sort of have a mind to still play in that market and hope and try to sort of union bust and intimidate journalists as well?
I mean, it's hard to say. As far as what's next for them, I imagine they'll probably keep trying to find the other candidates, other than states or, you know, Senate candidates, and other congressional candidates who support their broad vision, which is, you know, not just anti-union, anti-worker, but also anti-spending, you know, spending blocks. So, you know, that's probably one thing. As far as what they're going to do next in terms of getting involved with newspapers, I don't know. I do think about your comment that, you know, increasingly it's the very, very wealthy who are, they're being able to bankroll these journalistic enterprises. That is very worrying. I mean, when you think about some of the more successful outlets that are sprung up in recent years, you know, you look at things like Intercept. Mm-hmm. The Intercept does a lot of great work, but also it was entirely funded by a billionaire. Right. Now, fortunately, from what I know, it doesn't take that much sort of action or involvement anymore in the actual production of the stories. However, it's easy to imagine a scenario where you do get someone fabulously wealthy who's bankrolling a journalistic enterprise and maybe does want to take more of a strong role. And that is, in the case of someone like Joe Ricketts, decides, what's happening over there just doesn't really sit well with him, and he's going to, or he or she is better off just shutting the whole thing down, cutting his nose by his face, because, it's better to have it shut down and not running anymore than putting out a particular message or unionizing. So I think that is very concerning. I mean, the alternative to that, I'm not sure what that is. I think the media is still figuring out how to actually make journalism profitable, in the 21st century. It remains to be seen. I would say one heartening example is recently there was a story about The Guardian. And The Guardian, after losing money for years, has started to turn it around, but basically being able to cultivate a very loyal audience who will donate to them. So it's
right.
Sort of reader-funded thing. So maybe that's the alternative, maybe a sort of Bernie Sanders campaign for journalism. I don't know. We'll have to see again.
So, Branko, final question. Let's just touch on this briefly before we jump. I mean, maybe also part of the alternative is possibly some of the signals that we saw in last Tuesday's elections. I'm definitely someone who, across the board, I mean, I wanted the least inspiring machine Democrat like a guy Northam to win that Virginia race. That was still important, but much more exciting for the long term and much more relevant for the future prospects of kind of reclaiming the country and the globe from inherited wealth, essentially. Was the performance of leftist candidates and social Democrats, whether it was Larry Krasner as DA in Philadelphia, even somebody like my friend Jabari Bridgeport, who didn't win but took 29% of the vote in his New York City city council race here in Brooklyn, was incredibly impressive. You kind of documented that everywhere from a mayoral's race in St. Paul to voters approving Medicaid expansion in Maine, it wasn't just a hashtag resistance win last Tuesday. It was definitely a win for social democracy.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, of course, with these kind of elections, there's always a certain amount of the pendulum swinging back, basically. After the Democrats win the presidency, you usually get Republicans back to win congressional seats. So, I mean, in one sense, it was expected, but what was unexpected is you know, have this series of elections similar to what happened with Bernie Sanders, basically, and to be honest with Donald Trump as well. Yeah, it further sort of eroded this conventional wisdom that supposedly exists around, you know, how politics should work and what kind of candidate, quote unquote, electable and unelectable, and what you can say and what you can't. And these elections show that, you know, you can actually have an unapologetically progressive message. You can refer to yourself as a socialist, and you can still win. And in fact, in some cases, it seems like people might prefer that, you know, more than, you know, just used to the regular kind of state democratic candidate. I think that's one element of it. The other element of it is as well is that, you know, you saw a pretty significant amount of diversity in the actual candidate being elected.
It's very
again,
important.
Totally exploding the idea that, you know, I mean, for months, you know, well, for the whole last year, we've been hearing from pundits, centrist pundits, who are basically saying, you know, Democrats have to move back to the center, and also they have to, you know, forget about the, you know, they can't be embroiled in quote unquote bathroom issue and all that kind of stuff. They forget about that. They just have to move back to the center. And then, you know, you had a transgender candidate beating out the guy in Virginia who had written the state.
You had a transgender candidate defeat a bigot. And what was so impressive about her campaign was that fusion. I mean, she obviously, in and of itself, it's an incredible, you know, that's one of the more satisfying wins in modern American politics, to have a transgender candidate beat a bigot. And then also she ran, you know, from both ends. She also ran this very effective, like, look, this district needs to be much better represented in bread and butter issues. And I think that you're right that there's been all of this kind of delusion at higher levels of Democratic politics on both ends. There's been people saying we can't have a serious, for real, robust, anti-monopoly, pro-universal healthcare, universal services agenda. And then on the flip side, there's also been, you know, people trying to tack back to kind of 90s Clintonism, which is that, oh, we should try to accommodate the forces of reaction and bigotry. And that's been the sort of debate of kind of high-level Democrats who are still just sort of stuck in this kind of dead thinking zone defenses from the 90s and the 80s. And what we have begun to prove is that fusion of a commitment to the, you know, emerging America demographically, and a deep, broad, full commitment to social justice across the board, combined with economic social democracy and radicalism, that's the winning formula. So we did do a lot. The piece was Yesterday Was a Good Day, and also Meet the Ricketts. They're both at Jacobin. We'll have links to all of Bronco's. We can find all the Bronco's work on our website. Bronco Marchetic, thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, thanks very much. And thanks for the patience.
Oh, no problem. Take care, man. All right, everybody. We are going to go to the fun half. What happened before? Why were we late? There was a stream issue?
Yeah, YouTube issue. YouTube's messed around with how they ingest streams, and it's playing up with our software.
How they ingest streams. Not good. All right, everybody, we're going to get to the fun half. Tonight, the Michael Brooks Show is live at 7 p.m. on the Majority Report YouTube channel, talking with Ben Mankiewicz. Then Sarah Jones from The New Republic joins us in studio. She's going to be talking about why evangelicals cannot quit Roy Moore, plus Maine's Medicaid expansion. Ben and I are going to talk about Weinstein and the never-ending revelations of abuse in Hollywood. We're going to talk about Keurig filters and Alabama Republicans and National Republicans. Right-wing Mandela. We have some footage we found of his radio show weighing in on the Roy Moore issue. You're going to love the pyramid segment for patrons. This last Sunday, we talked about Thomas Sankara, Africa's Che, with Milton Alamadi. That was Illicit History, Episode 9. We've almost cleared 800 patrons. If you haven't checked out the show yet, listen or watch tonight. Subscribe to Michael Brooks Show on iTunes, or catch up on Michael Brooks Show on YouTube. Or just make the plunge and get the whole bunch. There's a lot. It's super lopsided if you become a patron. I would say you get like 2/3 more content.
And we'll start streaming video games when we get to 1,000.
When we get to 1,000, Matt and I are going to play Wolfenstein. And we are almost at 800. So Patreon/TMBS, Michael Brooks Show on iTunes, Michael Brooks Show on YouTube, Patreon/TMBS. Become a member of the Majority Report today. You know, 646-257-3920, 646-257-3920. The IMs are on. We'll see you in the fun half.